Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk about those extra corn acres farmers may be putting in the ground this spring and the biofuels boom.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
A little bit later in this edition of Commodity Week, we'll talk with John Roach of Roach Ag Marketing. Our panelists today are Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services from Bloomington, Illinois, and Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. We're beginning to see a number of acreage estimates. Farm Futures says corn farmers will put 88.4 million acres in the ground. The Congressional Budget Office is using an 86.2 million acre figure, and AFBF puts the increase at 86.5 million. All of those figures are better than a 10% increase. What do you think? Is that possible? Dale Durkles.
You know, when you go into this year and you start talking about the acreage gains that are going to occur, I think anything is possible. I've jokingly, when I've been in front of the crowds, told them that the dartboard I need to figure out how many acres are going to plant to the different crops won't go through my office door. It's that big. It's a huge unknown, and a lot of the reason is that we don't have anything historically that provides a good precedent to guide us on this situation. I'm personally building in somewhere between 8 and 10 million more acres of corn.
Mike Georgie of Allendale?
Well, Allendale's estimating 8.7 million, but I think you talked to – we had our conference this past weekend, and we asked the question how many people were buying more seed corn this year than last, and I'd say 75 or 80% said they were. So is that 10% or 20% more corn? I do not know.
And Kirk Kimmel?
We're finding the same observation when we do our meetings, too. 75% of the hands go up on additional acreage, and that's a variance between an additional 10 to 25% more acres. I think it's going to be huge. We're in the 10 million acre plus camp on that. When you talk to seed corn salesmen, they're smiling. They're truly running out of numbers. When you talk to the seed salesmen for the soybean guys, it's a whole different story. They got to give away a jacket, thermos, hat, pocket knife, and whatever they can to get a bean sold.
Well, I don't have the final numbers. It sure looks like the figures U of I Extension collected while on the road over the last 2 weeks won't push quite as high as any of the numbers we've talked about so far. We interviewed maybe 500 and collected data from those farmers in six different meetings across the state. The first set out of Collinsville, Mount Vernon, and Bloomington averaged a 6.7% increase. So it might be interesting to see what the figures show up when we throw Springfield and Malta and Moline into that pack. Gary Schnitke is working on those numbers, and we hopefully will have them in our weekend newsletter at willag.org. And, of course, they'll be posted on the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. Some really interesting technology we used while we were out on the road, and I'm hopeful that we get some good data. I don't know that we can really talk about the numbers but too much, but that's a whole lot lower than what most people are thinking at this time. Kurt, you look puzzled.
Yeah, that is surprising, the feedback. But yet, it's yet to be determined. And I mean by that, the wheat. There's talk about the wheat doesn't come up right, that we'll see a big shift maybe putting corn into wheat. Also, too, depends on price. Then lastly, it's going to depend on spring weather. You know well as I do, if we're wet, boy, we're not going to get those acres.
Taking a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade for the week, the March corn had a high of $4.11, the low at $3.97 and a quarter. March settled at $4.05 and a half. They were off a penny and a quarter. The December contract, on the other hand, up 7¾ cents at $3.98 and a half. Anything in that that tells you this market has more in the new crop than the old?
You know, the big thing that I caught in looking at the markets this last week, you know, a week ago, we actually did it. We had December corn futures trade over $4 in the overnight session, but didn't do it during the day. But this last week, we had December corn trade up over $4 during the day and close over $4. I think it was like a 402 close or 402 and a fraction. I think that's significant in the fact that prior to this year, we had never had December corn trade over the $4 mark. And I think that's telling us that there's probably still more to come. It also tends to tell me that, or reinforces the notion, we have the industry trading, not the fundamentals of the old crop. The industry is trying to figure out what's ahead with the new crop, and that's where all the attention is at.
Have you done... Well, go ahead.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think the emotion of the market is still, are we going to get the acres? And are we going to have the weather to produce that 154 to 160 bushel an acre crop? Because even if we get the 6, 8, 10 million more acres, we still have to produce a big crop.
Well, doesn't it matter a great deal about where these acres come from? So, for instance, if the U of I numbers pan out and it's more like a 7 or 8% increase and there's 900,000 additional acres in Illinois, that leaves a whole lot of acres in Iowa, and then the outlying areas have to produce a whole bunch more corn. But wouldn't that drag the yield down nationally, and we just don't come up with the bushels even if we make the acreage?
A lot of the analysts first right out of the chute said, well, a lot of those acres are going to be North Dakota, Louisiana, down in Tennessee, where it doesn't matter. But these acres are here in the heart of the Corn Belt, and these are high productive ground. Plus, too, we got to remember technology. This seed coming out today is a lot superior. You're talking guys in the South that could raise 150, 170 bushel. But lastly, we can argue acres all day long, all night long, but the bottom line is yield. You change yield 5 to 10 bushels in corn, that changes the bottom line more than acres.
You know, Dale, I want to take a look at this cattle on feed report, and I think I've got the numbers in front of me somewhere. Anyway, the cattle on feed report came out this week on Friday afternoon, and it showed cattle were staying pretty heavy on feed at 101, placed in December at 91, marketed in December at 95. Are those numbers that are pretty good for the marketplace? Are they showing you that the livestock industry is staying in? Is going to hold strong, or is there something in terms of a different message that you saw?
No, I think the one thing you got to glean off this cattle on feed report today is that those are numbers that represent the month of December. And, you know, the month of December, we basically had a corn market that traded in a fairly volatile, wide-swinging range, but still roughly within the same price range that we enjoyed in the month of November. And these numbers are pretty consistent. Placement and marketing is what we saw in November. It's hard for us here today to imagine, but we have to remember right after first of the year is when we had the corn market make another leap up. So, you know, that would say that we could start to see some of these changes start to manifest by the time we get into the February cattle on feed report. And if you take a clue here at this point, what has happened to the feeder cattle market, we've continued to slide lower, and we dipped down lower here again this week. So the feeder cattle market staying weak is telling you that placements are really starting to get softer yet.
Tell me, have you looked out and thought about how the livestock industry might change? What is on the books in terms of the ethanol industry? What may or may not be put up? And how that all works in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years out? Have you had discussions with your superiors, with other folks in the business, with farmers about longer-term issues and the way things might play for U.S. ag in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Well, Allendale researched both times when corn went up. Was it 75 and 96? And cattle and hogs both slipped down when corn went up and numbers of production went down. But because of the numbers of production going down, the price has come back again. So I think you're seeing feeder cattle prices kind of relating to the overall extra cost of the corn. And as them numbers go down, you're going to have that price go up because you're going to have a tighter supply cattle. You still have an export problem. Japan's still wondering if they're going to buy cattle again from us. But hogs, they're staying strong because they're expecting an 8% increase in export numbers on hogs. So the demand is there, and as long as the demand is there, you're going to find the production there.
You know, the one thing I think that's interesting, you know, when you look at this, if you go back and you look at 73 when we had corn make a big leap upwards, when you look back at 1996 when we had corn prices make a huge leap upward, we had a market at that point that was very much oriented to things going on in the export sector. This one's something that's going on domestically, has to do with ethanol. It creates a whole different set of rules in the game. The cattle industry especially, they can be the beneficiary of feeding the DDGs, whether you want to talk beef cattle or dairy cattle versus the pork industry or the poultry industry have some more difficulty there. So that creates an unknown that you know, it's hard to quantify and to see the impact. The other thing, you step back in here, when you look at the hogs that I see going on today, whenever the corn market makes a leap higher, what do the distant hog futures do? They make a leap higher, too. We got June hogs out to new highs. We're trading up in the high 70s on June hogs. You know, and an $80 June hog is the equivalent of a $60 cash hog. So we've got a pork trade that's very sensitive to what's going on with corn prices. And I think those distant months are doing everything they can to make sure that people don't liquidate out. It's creating a very odd structure and situation, and it creates a lot of unknowns that I don't have an easy way to answer at this point.
Kurt, are you more comfortable with the high price of corn given the political situation in Washington, D.C., the Bush administration on Tuesday during the State of the Union address talking about a 35 billion gallon RFS, and then the Democrats in combination with a few Republicans making a secondary announcement that they're wanting to push a 60 billion gallon RFS by 2030. One is the first by 2017. Looks like stepping stones along the way. How do you view both of those?
Well, it's fairly aggressive, and naturally, if you do the math on it, it's not going to be all driven from a corn ethanol. There's going to be other products, and the scary part is down the road when technology is a little bit more developed, we'll probably lose some corn ethanol to switchgrass or corn stalks or some cellulose products. So near term, it's quite bullish going down that path. Corn ethanol is the answer short term here, but down the road as this technology develops, who knows?
Let's pull the panelist. Should farmers be partially sold on their new crop corn, and at what rate? And we'll start with you, Dale.
I think if a person is sitting there and today with December corn futures at $4, knowing that they can't bear a lot of risk, yeah, I would probably maybe have some sold. There are a lot of things you can do in options that basically will buy you some insurance at some relatively high levels that maybe a person could look at in lieu of cash sales. I'm not very aggressive at this game, though, because we're flying into a situation that really is unknown. I characterize where we're at right now a lot like where we were in January 1973. I am one that wants to be a little bit more of a gunslinger and be bold and stay patient on those sales rather than looking at the sales prices today and going, I like it, I want to sell it. There may be more, and I think a person needs to be careful and not get too aggressive.
I almost hate to ask this, but we mentioned it in October. You specifically, I think it was October, mentioned 5. As a number?
I can still talk that. I have no bashfulness about talking that at this point.
We'll skip talking about it at the moment. Maybe we'll let John Roach take that up. How about you, Mike? Where should we be on cash
sales
for 07?
Well, we're 50% hedged at 336. We've got some calls bought to cover it. And I think you need to be aggressive in your sales because, you know, I think if you miss a sale at $4 corn and you missed it at $2.50, it's a heck of a lot worse to miss it, especially if you're going to do more corn acres. Get them covered.
As we go higher here, what goes up comes down. As we go higher, I think your risk is, as a producer, is back to the downside. You know, I think this first leg out of the lows here needs to be taken advantage of. We like being 30% priced in the cash corn market. What makes economical sense to leave your upside open is coming in by put options. Put the floor under you, this thing goes higher, you can turn around and sell your cash grain higher. We roll over for some unknown reason. If the hedge funds decide to sell 400,000 contracts, you got your butt covered.
We'll take a look at the rest of the numbers now. Taking a look at soybean futures, March contract at a high this week, 728 and three quarters, a low at 707 and a quarter. They settled at 710 and a half, off 7 1/4 from last week. The Noves at 763 on the weekly charts were down 6 1/4. Wheat futures, March contract 482.5 on the high, the low at 461. The March settled down 3.5 at 463.5. And July wheat, your harvest month, at $4.85, off 3 1/4. March oats at 262 1/4 were up 7 cents in the last week. From the Mercantile Exchange, February live cattle a 91.40 top, a low at 89.35. Their settlement down 82.5 cents at 90.22.5. And the January futures at 94.10 were off 90 cents for the week. And the hogs February contract, 63.87.5, were up 2.30. John Roach in 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Cold weather maintained a grip on Illinois this week, with temperatures running near to below normal. Temperatures this week range from just above normal in southeastern Illinois to 4 degrees below normal in far western Illinois, where snow cover was deeper and more uniform. It would have been even colder except for the fact that cloud cover was persistent on many nights, preventing radiational cooling. After last weekend's snow, the only precipitation this week was some light snow and flurries that came with a couple of fast-moving clipper systems moving through the Midwest. One at midweek left an inch or more of fluffy snow on the ground across parts of central Illinois. The cold weather will persist through next week and for the foreseeable future as a long-fetched northwest flow funnels Arctic air into the United States. Disturbances moving through this pattern will bring some occasional light snow or flurries to Illinois during the week. It looks like the best chance for precipitation will be the last half of the week, when a low in the Gulf states could bring some snow to southern Illinois, and a clipper moving across Wisconsin brings some light snow to northern Illinois. It could be followed by the coldest weather of the season next weekend, with temperatures dropping below zero across much of the Midwest. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilbert.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists today are Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing from Normal, Illinois. Our guest is John Roach. He's the president of Roach Ag Marketing. It's a company founded in 1978 to help farmers do a better job of marketing their grain and livestock. And its website at roachag.com proclaims that it's still the core business. The company's made up of about 20 brokers, including our Thursday afternoon cash grain analyst, Bill Mayer. The home office is in Boca Raton, Florida, but 9 of the branch offices are located in Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Illinois. John Roach joins us from Boca Raton. Hi, John.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm very well. So let's start with you with the last question we asked of our panelist, which is, how do you view new crop cash sales?
I think new crop sales need to be small at this point. The problem that we have this year is similar to last year in that we needed to have a big production last year, and if we failed to have the big production, prices would go up sharply. And the same situation is happening this year. If we fail to have a big crop this year, prices are going to go up sharply. And so we're keeping a number of contracts small. We'll increase the percentages that we sell as we get into our normal selling season, which is March, April, May, and June.
John, this is Dale. You know, an interesting thing's developed this year that's kind of unusual, and it corn's being the leader and pushing wheat up and carrying beans with it. And I'd noticed that we're getting corn prices dangerously close to the equivalent value of wheat to feed it. Do you think we're going to see some wheat feeding here even in the last part of this grain marketing year and certainly on into next marketing year?
Yes, I think we will. As we get to the latter part of this corn crop down in through feeding country, as people put new cattle on feed, wheat's going to be a very competitive ingredient.
John, looking at the corn, and I understand your objective of why corn could possibly go higher. Looking at that, what is your objective for beans, and how much you have sold, and where do you want to sell them at?
Same thing. I look at the market differently here. As Dale said, you know, we're in some unprecedented times here. So using old rules don't seem to work. The better thing is to just let the market tell you. We pay close attention to, we happen to like slow stochastics. We have them set in such a way that we get up, you know, 10 to 12 sell signals a year. And so we're just going to do what we always do, which is to follow our sell signals, which occur at market peaks during the time of year when we normally have a market peak. Our market peaks seem to come fairly regular in March, April, May, and June. And it would seem to us that planting is going to be the key. What someone answered earlier, well, acreage is going to really depend on weather. I don't know any way to forecast weather. So my guess is that the market will be as nervous about getting this crop planted in a timely fashion as we've ever seen it. We've had quite a bit of moisture that's accumulated over the winter months, fall and winter months. And so normal moisture in the month of March could make us worried about can we get in and get it done timely. So we're just really following our sell signals, and normally we don't sell corn or soybeans in January unless we just need cash flow.
John, what's your best estimate of corn and bean acres this spring?
I think there's going to be a lot of corn acres planted. I would be up in the 10 million acre increase because I think not only do we have the high prices that we're looking at and the relative price relationships that we're looking at, we also have a mental attitude amongst producers that this one is for real. This big market we have is not going away next year.
If you're at 10 million, and do you agree with them that this one's for real and it's not going away next year?
Yes, absolutely.
And
real market.
Like Dale, can you put a five out there somewhere?
Absolutely. I'm not sure how far you go before you choke the livestock guy the first time you have a problem with your crop. And one of the things that I worry about is that we're continuing to see people doing what they've done for the last 10 years, and that is, well, we're going to sell forward because selling forward has been the right thing to do, so we're going to do it again. If you recall our conversations last fall, I believe inventory control is more important than anything else in this kind of environment. I'd just as soon maintain the inventory and put some insurance underneath of it, and plan on selling the crop harvested in the fall of 07. I'd like to sell it in the spring of 08 when we're really worried about how we're going to get enough acres.
What do you do with the beans?
Beans, I think, is the same kind of situation. Now, I do have one worry here. This spring, we're going to have competition out of South America, so we could lose our market as we move in the latter part of the spring. We'll be quicker selling beans in the spring than we are corn.
And what did you make of the announcements out of Washington this week?
I think it's more of what we thought we would see. We thought we would see the government wanting additional alternative energy sources, and that's exactly what we saw. The market the day after, in fact, is the evening after the announcement, the market was actually a little disappointed that they didn't get more. That worries me a little bit because if you can't impress people with a 35 million gallon projection, if that doesn't impress, people are getting really cranked up a little over bullish perhaps here. So I am a little concerned about that, and that may give us a sell-off here as we move in the month of February.
John, just to clarify on your marketing, what did you mean by a small percentage, and what percentage would you maybe forward contract on corn and beans?
Well, I think everybody's in a different position, but if I were in a position where I had plenty of storage to hold all my crop, the percentage I would contract would be very, very small, maybe 10 or 15%. If I didn't have enough storage, so I could store half of my crop, then I might, be a little further along than that. But people who are out there selling half their crop and beyond need to remember how it felt this fall when they were delivering corn at substantially higher prices that they priced earlier.
You know, John, you kind of alluded to it in one of your prior answers, but what do you think the market or how the market's going to perform here over the course of the next 6, maybe 8 weeks? Because we're really right in the middle of a game here where we don't have a lot of fresh news or big news in terms of government reports or anything to come out. Do you think we're just going to tend to stall up here, or how do you see the market trading?
Yes, I think we're going to stall here. I think that we've had a sell signal going this week. We've made sales to take care of cash flow needs out through the end of February. I expect a stall in the market. Because how much more bullish do you get than the numbers that Informa gave us on planted corn acreage and the projection or the mandate that the government's trying to or the administration is trying to get Congress to pass to increase renewable fuels to the percentages they're talking about. I mean, I don't know anything any more bullish than that within our current structure. The only thing that can be more bullish than that, as I see it, is if we have problems in South America or some other growing area, or if we have problems getting things planted in this country. And we don't necessarily need to have problems. We just need to be worried about it. At the moment, there's not many farmers out there that are worried about putting the corn in the ground today.
Offhand,
they will be more worried, I'll guarantee you, 6 weeks from now.
Offhand, have you done the numbers to check and see how many corn acres it would take to do the 35 million RFS? I know they're looking at other places.
You have to get it from other areas. And I think the real news that the president gave us was that, and if you notice, a lot of members of Congress were standing and applauding after his announcement of 35 million gallons or 35 billion gallons. They're going to put money into the technology to get all of these other methods for renewable resources cranked up.
John, one other thing here, you know, all the commentary and all the focus has been on what's going on domestically. Do you think the industry really has ignored or forgotten about the fact that we are so tight in the world on grain supplies?
I don't think so. I mean, we're trading $4.24 July corn. So nobody's, and although we're tight, there's plenty of corn available in the old crop slot. What we're doing here is we're putting prices up in anticipation of some kind of concern or worry here in the spring, or perhaps even a legitimate weather problem that reduces the yields.
John, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you very much.
John Roach is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Boca Raton, Florida, where he serves as the president. And now a final word from our panelists. Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal.
There's just a lot of what-ifs. I mean, everywhere you look, what-if. And from an economic point of view, risk management point of view, we feel this is the year of the put option. You put in a floor, if the market goes higher, you can still take advantage of it.
Mike Georgie of Allendale?
I'll have to agree. I mean, we're up at some outstanding prices. We can lock in some heck of a dollar per acre profit, and we need to take advantage and leave the top side available.
And Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
On another front, producers out there need to remember seasonally this is a time that petroleum markets bottom, and they tend to go up from spring into summer. Maybe you should have a good portion of those fuel needs covered.
Our thanks to Kurt Kimmel and Dale Durkles and Mike Georgie. And that does wrap up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this Commodity Week program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is www.willag.org. There you can find Commodity Week, weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. You have a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at willuiuc.edu.